This week I read the story of a man named Joe Resnick. Joe is somebody you probably haven't heard of. He was somebody that I hadn't heard of either. But this is part of why I want to tell you his story. And as we move through this time together, a sermon and reflection together, I think it is good to remember the story of Joe and those around him, that they can happen just to folks like you and I. Joe is a writer. Joe's a sports writer in Los Angeles. He's written about every professional sports team in Los Angeles for years and years, for decades. He's a regular in the scene. He's a regular in the press box and on press row. He's a writer for the AP, but he's not a member of the Associated Press. He writes stories for the Baseball Writers Association of America, but he's not a member of the Baseball Writers Association of America. He's written tons and tons of stories. He's dedicated his life to this work, and yet not many, if any, know who he is. He frequently wondered, as he went about his work, whether anybody knew him. He sat in the same spot on press row or in the press box at Dodger Stadium. And he wondered, you know, does anybody know that I'm here? He wrote so much that he never had time, he says, to get married or to have kids. So one day, Joe shows up at a game. He walks into Dodger Stadium, and the official scorer says to him, "Joe, I think you need to go see the doctor." He had lost weight and was looking pale. So Joe hadn't seen the doctor for 25 years and thought maybe that was something he ought to do too. Joe went to the doctor and discovered he had stage 4 lung cancer and that it had moved throughout his body. He decided, because he thought his whole life that he had been alone, that he would do treatments by himself, and eventually he would move through the hospice time alone. That didn't last. It didn't last because a fellow writer noticed that Joe wasn't in his spot. He noticed that Joe was no longer showing up to his game. Joe had been seen. He had been noticed. Joe's impact was felt. So his coworker and friend called him and said, "Why aren't you here? What's going on?" He discovered that Joe was sick. He was unable to pay his bills and unable to take care of himself as he moved to death. So this coworker organized an online funding site, and players and coaches and other writers raised over $20,000 for his care. They did know who Joe was. They had seen him. Joe was over via email inducted into the Baseball Writers Association of America in a matter of hours, was given an award for meritorious coverage. And his coworkers and colleagues showed up to his home and his bed and gave him that award. I read the story on Thursday night, sitting on my couch. It struck me that in some ways, it may have captured some of the feelings that seemed to pervade my world this week, and I think some of yours, based on some of the conversations that I've had. Some of us this week have felt fearful. Some of us have felt alone. Some of us have felt confused and shocked. Some, to be sure, felt a sense of relief and perhaps joy. Some felt that they had become non-existent, that their experience of life and relationships was now in jeopardy, that who they thought they were had not been seen by the world and would be even further pushed down and away. No matter what the experience of this week was like for you, watching all that took place in it, in the days leading up to Tuesday night and in the days since, I think we've all seen this week a country hurt, a country divided, and a country lost. The story of Joe captures not only that sense of what it is like to move through this world alone, but also the power of one person and one group of people to reach out, to make a difference. There are indeed simple and powerful ways you and I can decide that the divisions and the hate and the violence that we see, and this is directed at all sides of the political spectrum, it's not a political statement, that is wrong. That's not right. It breaks us apart. It tears us down. It promotes an ideal that says one person has more value than another based on what they believe or who they love or what they look like. To promote this is not of God. Love is. Building bridges is. Striving for unity is. And this is our call. Even when we are angry, even when we are hurt, even when we are scared, and feel lost. After hearing the gospel reading from Luke this week, I'm sure I'm not the only one that wondered whether or not this was just a coincidence that we had these two things happening at the same time. As Tuesday drew nearer and nearer, it did seem as if Jesus' prediction that the day was coming, when not one stone would be left on another, when all would be thrown down. All that these folks knew who were listening to Jesus say this, all that they had put their trust in for their faith, for their lives, for their well-being, for their money, would be crashed down. It would come to rubble. The temple would no longer be there, Jesus was saying. It will not last forever. The depiction of the end times, the last of days that we hear felt to some in our own day, a little bit too real. This description hit a little bit too close to home this week for some of us. It's maybe for different reasons too. Maybe we didn't like the candidates we had to pick between. Maybe we didn't like the rhetoric in our society. Maybe we didn't like how folks were treating each other, whatever the case may be. For me, it wasn't about one candidate or another. It wasn't about one winner or another. It was about the way that we treated each other, the apparent divisions in our country that feel too big to be bridged, and the hurtful ways we have spoken to one another this week. For that matter, for the last few months, actually. Perhaps for you, it wasn't about this week at all. It wasn't about the election at all. While it did hold our nation collectively in its grasp, we still, all of us, moved through this week as individuals, as spouses and partners, as grandparents and parents, as children and grandchildren. We may be entering worship today and this week having finished a week that saw one of our relationships break or end. We may be feeling the effects of a new diagnosis. Perhaps we are feeling more joy than we can stand. Perhaps that didn't happen to you this week, and perhaps this week was actually just perfect. If that's the case, we thank God. But for many people I spoke with and shared with, for many people I wrote with this week, felt a little bit too much like our foundation has been shaken. Like the stones that held up our understanding and experience of the world were being brought down, and not one would be left on another. Like the wars and insurrections raged, and fear was the guiding force. Like much that we put our trust in, the goodness of humanity, the care of others, like that was shaken. It wasn't destroyed, to be sure, but the foundation seemed to shake even for just a couple of days. If that was your week, if that was your experience, and even if it wasn't, we have all lived through moments like this, I invite you to enter this place and this space with the words of the prophet Isaiah ringing loud and clear. They speak to all situations and moments of our lives, and it just so happens that this week might be especially so. There is much going on in our worlds, and the weight that we might be carrying into worship to be with God today is heavy. Please know that God calls you and us to offer that up, that God has promised to make our burden light, and that this time and space might be just the moment you need to do that. We'll return to the prophet Isaiah in a second, but I think it is first important that we spend some time with Luke. Throughout the passage, Jesus is predicting those things that will happen in the last days, what it will look like, what it will sound like, what it will feel like. We hear of stones falling, earthquakes, false leaders, persecutions, famines, plagues. All of this and more captures Jesus' prediction of those final times and speaks to many of the feelings we might have had this week and throughout our lives. In the middle of all this, Jesus says, "When you hear of wars and insurrections, do not be terrified, for these things must first take place. But the end will not follow immediately." The end will not follow immediately. So all of these things that predict to us the end of days, those things that we hear in the lesson from Luke, those that make us feel like the world might come to an end this week, they're actually not the end. They're actually, in some ways, the penultimate, not the ultimate. Instead, God is the main thing. God is the end. God is the culmination of all of our hopes and fears and desires. And God is the thing that will last throughout all ages and places and moments and experiences of life, even those times that Jesus is describing. all of those things that we have a tendency to put our trust in will crumble. It will come down, and it will not last. But God will. God does. In our moments of fear and of anger and of loss and frailty, we cast all towards God because we trust that God not only hears our cries, but that God does something about them. God transforms them and us into people who can bridge gaps that divide our humanity and our society, into people who help the world return to a place where love and patience and kindness and hope are how we respond in the face of every other thing in this world. In the text that we heard from the prophet Isaiah, we hear more about not only God's ability to transform, to renew, to create, but God's willingness to do that too. It is God, it is who God is, to be changing, creating, making all things new and whole and restored. So this particular piece of scripture is addressed to a people who have just returned from exile. They are returning to their homeland, having found everything destroyed, everything ruined. In the chapters preceding ours, there were pervasive problems of wickedness, of bloodshed, injustice, false worship, blind leadership, and more. So what God does is God speaks. God speaks and says that even after all of this, there will be no more weeping. There will be no more infants dying, no more people who die too soon. Curses on homes and vineyards will be lifted. People will build homes and inhabit them. And no one will hurt on all of God's holy mountain. God will answer when the people call. Not only will God answer, but God will hear their cries and will come to them before they can even speak their needs. Trusting in God's willful ability to make all things new, to restore and to transform, we cry out to God. We are told in this, God hears. Actually, we're told that God already has heard. The prophet Isaiah writes of God, "Before they call, I will answer. While they are yet speaking, I will hear." Our words and our shouts and our prayers are already to God's ears before they leave our mouths. What a holy image and an incredible thought. For this we give thanks to God, that God has promised to no longer hide God's face, but to be with us and to hear us. So is this a time of fear for you? Cry out to God. Is this a time of joy for you? Cry out to God. Is this a time of too much unknown for you? Cry out to God. Is this a time of despair or terror or pain or anything else? Cry out to God. God has already heard your cries before you can speak them. God has already shown up to be by your side before you knew it. And God is about to create and to restore and to bless and to make whole. God has done it before. And it is in God's very nature to continue to do this work because God loves us. In Isaiah, God says, "I'm about to create Jerusalem as a joy and its people as a delight." The verb create in Hebrew in this particular sense is only ever applied in the Old Testament to be the work that God does. God is the only one who can create in this way. They're not kings, rulers, prophets, princes in that time or in ours. Cannot create in the same way that God does. No human can work in the way that God promises to create new from old, to create life from death. It's not possible. And in the times that I have felt despair and hopelessness and fear in my own life, this thought is more than reassuring. You know, it isn't up to any of us to do this work, really. It doesn't depend on us. Are we called to participate with God in creating in this new way? Absolutely, sure. But in the moments we can't, God still does. And in the moments we would rather not, God still does. Because God is not only the one who creates, but God is the one who is always creating, who is always making new, who is always restoring and drawing us to wholeness. As one writer puts it, at the heart of the Judeo-Christian faith is this creator who emerges even in the bleakest hour of human history to create anew. A close friend and colleague shared this week some thoughts on the night of the election. This is what he wrote. I think they apply still to our lives now. As the polls begin to close across the land, may our hearts open in love and reconciliation. We aren't actually the people we've been told we are, the people we've acted like over the past year and a half. We are loved and wonderfully cared for. Let's bring ourselves back to our original calling to care for one another. In these days, in this week that lies ahead of you, return to your call to care for one another, making God's love known. This is not a call from me based on the election results. This is a call from God to those of us who seek to follow God in this world. It would have happened and does happen whether there was an election or not. But it does seem that in this past week, and probably in the days and weeks and months ahead, we as people of faith will need to be especially mindful of the call to love all people. It is at the core of who God is to love, and so we are called to do that too. It is part of the creative and renewing and transforming work that God is doing and that God is calling us to share in. Another part of that is to be people who embody unity, who live out not the separation of groups based on ideology or race or any other marker, but who seek to build bridges. We are called to be people like Joe's friends, who knew he was there, who showed up to be his friend, and who loved him when he needed to be loved. There is nobody in this world, not one person, who should feel ignored or unnoticed, or shut out. And yet there is. There are people like Joe and others in our very midst. There are those who are feeling unseen, cast out, unknown, and afraid. There are those who have not had their story and experiences known and heard. They have not been loved in the midst of that. And that can leave us sad, despairing. But as people of faith, we are called to be hopeful. We take our hope in God. All our hope on God is founded. And so we get to work to make known that we love them because God loves them. And this can be done in little and big ways. It can be done in super practical ways. It is up to us. It is up to you and I in this world to create with God, to renew with God, to restore with God. I mean, if not us, who? God's will for all people is to be united with God and with each other. This work and this calling is needed now, perhaps as much as ever.